together, saying nothing until it beeps. One by one, the results come in. Negative, negative, negative. I start to cry again. I'm not sure if it's relief or something more complicated than that. Alex pulls me into his chest, rocks me soothingly side to side as I regain composure. I can't keep doing this to you, I say when I'm finally out of tears. Doing what? He asks in a whisper. I don't know. Needing you? He shakes his head against the side of mine. I need you too, puppy. It's then that I realize how thick and wet and trembling his voice is. When I pull back from him, I realize that he's crying. I touch the side of his face. Sorry, he says, closing his eyes. I don't know what I'd do if something happened to you. And then I understand. To someone like Alex, who lost his mother how he did, pregnancy isn't just a life-changing possibility. It's a potential death sentence. I'm sorry, he says again. God, I don't know why I'm crying. I pull his face down onto my shoulder, and he cries some more, his huge shoulders heaving with it. In all the years we've been friends, he has probably seen me cry hundreds of times, but this is the first time he's ever cried in front of me. It's okay, I whisper to him, and then, as many times as it takes, it's okay, you're okay, we're okay, Alex. He buries his damp face in the side of my neck, his hands curling in tight against the small of my back as I run my fingers through his hair, his damp lips warm against my skin. I know the feeling will pass, but right then, I wish so badly that we were here alone, that we had yet to even meet Sarah and Trey, that we could hold on to each other as long and tight as I think we might need to. We've always existed in a kind of world for two, but that's not the case anymore. I'm sorry, he says one last time as he unwinds himself from me, straightening up, looking out over the valley as the first rays of light splash across it. I shouldn't have. I touch his arm. Please don't say that. He nods, steps back, putting more distance between us, and I know with every fiber of my being that it's the right thing to do, but it still hurts. Trey seems like a great guy, he says. He is, I promise. Alex nods a few more times. Good. And that's it. He leaves for his morning run, and I'm alone again on the still terrace, watching morning chase the shadows across the valley. My period arrives 25 minutes later, while I'm scrambling eggs for breakfast, and the rest of our trip is a fantastically normal couple's trip. Except that deep down, I am completely heartbroken. It hurts to want it all, so many things that can't coexist within the same life. More than anything, though, I want Alex to be happy, to have everything he's always wanted. I have to stop getting in the way to give him the chance to have all of that. We don't so much as brush against each other until we hug goodbye. We never speak about what happened again. I go on loving him. 30. This summer. So, I guess we're not talking about what happened on Nikolai's balcony, and that needs to be fine. When I wake up in our Technicolor hotel room of the Lorea Palm Springs, Alex's bed is empty and made, and a handwritten note on the desk reads, "Running, be back soon. P.S. Already picked up the car from the shop." It's not like I expected a bunch of hugs and kisses and pledges of love, but he could have spared a "last night was great," or maybe a cheery exclamation point. Also, how is he running in this heat? There's just a lot going on in that very short note, and my paranoia helpfully suggests that he's running to clear his head after what happened. In Croatia, he'd freaked out. We both had. But that had happened at the tail end of the trip, when we could retreat to our separate corners of the country afterward. This time, we've got a bachelor party, rehearsal dinner, and wedding to get through. Still, I promised I wasn't going to let this mess us up, and I meant it. I need to keep things light to do my part in preventing a post-coital freakout. I think about texting Rachel for advice, or just to have someone to squeal with, but the truth is, I don't want to tell anyone about this. I want it to be something only between Alex and me, like so much of the world is when we're together. I toss my phone back onto the bed, grab a pen from my purse, and add to the bottom of Alex's note, "At pool, meet me there." When he shows up, he's still dressed in his running clothes and carrying a small brown bag and a paper coffee cup, and the sight of all this combined makes me feel tingly and eager. "Cinnamon roll," he says, passing me the bag, then the cup. "Latte. And the Aspire's out in the lot with its flashy new tire." I wave my coffee cup in a vague circle in front of him. "Angel, how much was the tire?"
"Don't remember," he says. "I'm gonna go shower."
"Before you come sweat by the pool?"
"Before I come sit in that pool for the entire day."
It's not much of an exaggeration. We lounge to our heart's content. We relax. We alternate between sun and shade. We order drinks and nachos from the poolside bar and reapply sunblock every hour and still make it back to the room with plenty of time to get ready for David's bachelor party. He and Tom decided to do separate ones, though both are co-ed, and Alex jokes that David chose this plan to force a popularity contest. "No one is more popular than your brother," I say.
"You haven't met Tom yet," he says,
then walks into the bathroom and starts the water. "Are you seriously showering again?"
"Rinsing," he says.
"Remember in elementary school how kids used to stand behind you in line for the water fountain and say, 'Save some for the whales'?"
"Yes," he says.
"Well, save some for the whales, buddy."
"You have to be nice to me," he says. "I brought you a cinnamon roll."
"Buttery and warm and perfect," I say, and he blushes as he shuts the bathroom door. I really have no idea what's going on. For example, why didn't we just stay in the room and make out all day? I slip into a 70s lime green halter jumpsuit and start working on my hair at the mirror outside the bathroom, and a few minutes later, Alex emerges already dressed and almost ready to go.
"How long do you need?"
he asks, looking over my shoulder to meet my eyes in the mirror, his wet hair sticking up in every direction. I shrug. "Just long enough to spray myself with adhesive and roll in a vat of glitter."
"So 10 minutes?
He guesses. I nod, set my curling wand down. "Are you sure you want me to come?"
"Why wouldn't I?"
"Because it's your brother's bachelor party," I say.
"And?"
"And you haven't seen him in months, and maybe you don't want me tagging along."
"You're not tagging along," he says. "You're invited. Also, there will probably be male strippers, and I know how you love a man in uniform."
"I was invited by David," I say. "If you wanted alone time with him..."
"There are like 50 people coming tonight," he says. "I'll be lucky if I make eye contact with David."
"But your other brothers will be there too, right?"
"They're not coming," he says. "They're not even flying out until tomorrow."
"Okay, but what about all the hot desert broads?" I say.
"Hot desert broads," he repeats.
"You're going to be the straight man belle of the ball." His head tilts.
"So you want me to go make out with some hot desert broads?"
"Not particularly, but I figure you should know that you still have that option. I mean, just because we..." His brow crinkles.
"What are you doing, Poppy?"
I absently touch my hair. "I was trying for a beehive, but I think I'm gonna have to settle for a bouffant.
No, I mean..."
He trails off.
"Do you regret last night?"
"No," I say, my face going red hot. "Do you?"
"Not at all," he says.
I turn to face him head on instead of through the mirror. "Are you sure? Because you've barely looked at me today." He laughs, touches my waist.
"Because looking at you makes me think about last night. And call me old-fashioned, but I didn't want to lie by the hotel pool with a raging hard-on all day."
"Really?" You'd think he just recited a love poem to me by the sound of my voice.
He presses me back onto the edge of the sink as he kisses me once, slow and heavy, his hands circling my neck to find the clasp of the jumpsuit's halter. It falls loose, and I arch back as he slides the fabric down to my waist. He cups my jaw and draws my mouth back to his, and I wrap my legs around him as our kisses deepen, his free hand moving down my bare chest.
"Do you remember when I was sick?"
I whisper against his ear. His hips grind against mine, and his voice comes out low and husky.
"Of course. I wanted you so badly that night,"
I admit, untucking his shirt.
"That whole week," he says, "I kept waking up on the verge of coming. If you hadn't been sick..."
I lift myself against him, and his mouth sinks into the side of my neck as I work at the buttons on his shirt.
"In Vale, when you carried me down that mountain..." "God, Poppy," he says, "I spent so much time trying not to want you."
He lifts me off the sink and carries me to the bed.
"And not nearly enough time kissing me," I say,
his laugh rattling against my ear as he lays us down.
"How long do we have?"
He kisses the very center of my chest.
"We can be late."
"How late?"
"As late as it takes."
"Oh my God," I say, as we step out onto the driveway of the mid-century mansion with its Googie-style swooped roof.
"This is amazing! He has this whole place rented out?" "Did I forget to mention that Tom is very fancy?"
"May have," I say. "Is it too late for me to marry him?"
"Well, there are 2 days until the wedding, and he's gay," he says, "so I really don't see why not."
I laugh, and he catches my hand, slips it into his own. Somehow, walking into a bachelor party holding Alex Nilsson's hand is more surreal than every surreal thing that just happened at the hotel. It makes me feel buzzy and giddy and intoxicated in the best possible way. We follow the music up the driveway, each holding one of the bottles of wine we picked out on the way here, and step into the cool dark of the foyer. Alex said there'd be 50 people. Making our way through the house, I'd guess there were at least 100, leaning on walls and sitting on the backs of fabulously gilded furniture. The back wall of the house is entirely glass and overlooks a massive pool, lit up purple and green, with a waterfall flowing into it on one side. People lounge on inflatable flamingos and swans in various states of undress. Women and drag queens in full-length sparkly gowns, men in swim trunks and thongs, people in angel wings and mermaid costumes alongside assumed Linfield people in suits and peplum dresses.
"Wow," Alex says. "I haven't been to a party this out of control since like high school."
"You and I had very different high school experiences," I say. Just then, an Adonis of a man with a charmingly boyish grin and a mop of golden waves spots us and springs out of the egg-shaped hanging chair where he was sitting.
"Alex! Poppy!"
David comes toward us with arms open and a lightly drunk sheen in his hazel eyes. He hugs Alex first, then grabs the sides of my face and plants sloppy kisses on both my cheeks.
"I'm so happy you're..."
His eyes fall to our clasped hands, and he claps his together.
"Holding hands!"
"You're welcome," I say, and he chortles, clamps a hand on each of our shoulders.
"You need some water?" Alex asks him, big brother mode activated.
"No, Dad," he says.
"You need some booze?"
"Yes," I say, and David waves his hand to a server I had not noticed in the corner, largely because she's spray-painted gold.
"Wow,"
Alex says, accepting two flutes of champagne from the faux statue's tray.
"Thanks for... wow."
She retreats, goes stone still again. "So what's Tom doing tonight?" I ask. "A bonfire of dollar bills on a solid gold yacht?"
"I really hate to tell you this, Pop," David says, "but a golden yacht would sink.
Trust me, we tried. Do you two want shots?"
"Yes,"
I say, at the same time Alex says, "No." As if by magic, shots are already being handed to us, vodka and Goldschlager, with its little gold shavings floating in the glasses. The three of us clink them together and down the spicy, sweet liquid in one gulp. Alex coughs.
I hate that.
David slaps him on the back.
I'm so glad you're here, dude.
Of course I am. Your little brothers only get married 3 times.
And your favorite one only gets married once,
David says.
Fingers crossed.
I hear you and Tom are amazing together, I say, and that he is very fancy.
The fanciest, David agrees. He's a director. We met on set.
On set, I cry. Listen to you.
I know, he says. I'm an insufferable LA person.
No, definitely not. Someone shouts for David then from the pool, and he gives her a 1-minute signal, then faces us again.
Make yourselves at home. Not our home, obviously, he adds to Alex, but like a super loud, super fun, super gay home with a dance floor out back, which I expect to see you both on shortly. Stop trying to make Poppy fall in love with you,
Alex says. Yeah, you really don't need to waste your time, I say. I'm already sold. David grabs my head and smooches the side of it again, then does the same thing to Alex and dances over to the girl in the pool, pretending to reel him in with an invisible fishing rod.
Sometimes I worry he takes himself too seriously,
Alex says flatly, and when a laugh rockets out of me, the corner of his mouth twitches in and out of a smile. We stand there, grinning for a few more seconds, our locked hands swinging back and forth between us. I thought you didn't like holding hands, I say.
And you said you did,
he says. So what, I just get whatever I want now? I tease. His smile flickers back into place, calm and restrained.
Yes, Poppy, he says. You get whatever you want now. Is that a problem?
What if I want you to have what you want? He arches an eyebrow.
Are you just saying that because you know what I'm going to say and you want to make fun of me for it?
No, I say. Why, what are you going to say? Our hands go still between us.
I have what I want, Poppy.
My heart flutters, and I pull my hand from his, coil it around his waist, and tip my head back to peer into his face. I am resisting the urge to PDA all over you right now, Alex Nilsson. He bends his neck and kisses me so long that a few people start cheering. When we pull apart, he's pink-cheeked and bashful.
Damn, he says. I feel like a horny teenager.
Maybe if we utilize the Jaeger bomb station in the backyard, I say, we'll go back to feeling like demure, mature 30-year-olds.
That sounds realistic,
Alex says, tugging me toward the back patio.
I'm in.
There's a bar out back and a food truck serving fish tacos parked on the grass. Behind that, a garden stretches out like something from a Jane Austen novel, right here in the middle of the desert.
Probably not great for conservation,
Alex remarks in true grandpa form. Probably not, I agree. But possibly great for conversation.
True, he says. When all else fails, you can always engage a stranger in thoughtful small talk about the dying earth.
At some point, we find ourselves sitting on the edge of the pool, pants and jumpsuit legs rolled up and legs dangling in the warm water. And that's when we hear David shouting excitedly from within a crowd,
Where's my brother? He's got to be part of this.
Sounds like you're needed. Alex sighs. David spots him and jogs over.
I need you to do this game.
Drinking game, I guess.
Not for Alex, David says. I bet he won't have to drink one single time. It's a David trivia game. You in?
Alex winces.
Do you want me to be?
David crosses his arm.
As the groom, I demand it. You really are never allowed to divorce Tom,
Alex says, lumbering to his feet.
For a multitude of reasons, David says. I agree.
Alex walks over to the long, candle-lit table where the game is starting up, but David lingers by me, watching him go.
He seems good, he says.
Yeah, I agree. I think he is. David's gaze drops to me, and he lowers himself onto the slick side of the pool, slipping his legs into the water.
So, he says, how did this happen?
This? He lifts his brows skeptically. This. I try to think of how to explain it. Years of undying love, occasional jealousy, missed opportunities, bad timing, other relationships, building sexual tension, a fight and the silence afterward, and the pain of living life without him. Our Airbnb's air conditioning broke. David stares at me for a few seconds, then drops his face into his hands, chuckling. Damn, he says, straightening up. I have to say I'm relieved.
Relieved?
Yeah. David shrugs. You know, it's like, now that I'm getting married, now that I know I'm staying in LA, I guess I've just been worried about him, back in Ohio, on his own. I think he likes Linfield, I say. I don't think he's there out of necessity. Besides, I wouldn't say he's on his own. Your whole family's there, all the nieces and nephew. That's my point.
David looks toward the trivia game at the table, watches as the three other contestants down shots of something caramel-colored, and Alex sips on a cup of water victoriously.
He's kind of an empty nester now.
His mouth twists into a frown that's so like his brother's that I feel a quick, painful impulse to kiss it away. When I think about what David's actually saying, the pain gets worse, harboring itself behind my ribcage like a little red knot.
You think he feels like that?
Like he raised us? Put all his emotional energy into making sure the three of us were okay? Driving Betty around to doctor appointments? Packing our fucking school lunches and getting Dad out of bed when he had one of his episodes? And then, all of a sudden, we all went off and got married and started having kids of our own while he's left to make sure Dad's all right?
Stony serious, David looks back at me.
No, Alex would never think like that. But I think he's been lonely. I mean, we all thought he was going to marry Sarah, and then...
Yeah. I lift my legs out of the pool and cross them in front of me.
I mean, he had the ring and everything, David goes on, and my stomach drops. He was supposed to propose, and then she was just gone, and...
He trails off when he sees the look on my face.
Don't get me wrong, Poppy.
He sets his hand on mine.
I always thought it should be you two. But Sarah was great, and they loved each other, and I just want him to be happy. I want him to stop worrying about other people and have something that's just his, you know?
Yeah. I can barely get the word out. I'm still sweating, but my insides have swiftly gone cold because all I can think is he was going to marry her. She said it in Tuscany, and after a few weeks, I brushed it off as an offhand comment. But now I can't help but see everything that happened on that trip in a different light. It was 3 years ago, but I still see it so vividly. Alex and me out on the terrace minutes before the sun rose, my arms crossed tight, nails bitten to the quick, pregnancy tests lined up on the stone wall, and Alex's watch chirping at us that it was time to find out what the future held. The way he'd broken down once I finally gathered myself, hunched his head, and cried against me. I can't keep doing this to you, I'd said, needing you. He'd told me he needed me too, but with Trey and Sarah there, the bubble that always seemed to envelop us, separate us from the world, had popped, and I felt so deeply ashamed for wanting so much of him, and I could tell he had too. Trey seems like a great guy, he'd said, and that was as close to saying, we have to stop this as we could get. Saying that would have been an admission of guilt. Even if we never kissed, never said the words outright, we were keeping whole parts of our hearts for each other only. Alex had wanted to marry Sarah, and I know now that I'd kept him from being able to. She'd broken up with him a second time after Tuscany, and even if she never knew exactly what had transpired, I was sure it had left a mark on him, shifted things between them for the worse. If I had been pregnant, if I'd decided to have the baby, I know beyond any doubt Alex would have been there for me, given up anything he had just to help. Sarah, like always, would have had to deal with the reality of me or move on. I can't help but wonder if I'd forced her to that point. If our friendship had cost him the woman he wanted to marry.
I feel sick, ashamed by the thought, guilty over how I ignored my more complicated feelings for him so I could justify staying in his life. It's one thing when your boyfriend's rowdy brothers or his widowed father need him. But I was just some other woman, whose needs he'd always put first to the detriment of his own wants and happiness. And this week, I'd stumbled into this selfishly because that was my default with him. To ask for what I wanted, to let him give it to me, even if it wasn't necessarily the best thing for him. I'm no longer giddy or buzzy or anything but sick to my stomach. David sets his hand on my shoulder and smiles at me, jarring me out of the kaleidoscope of complicated, painful feelings pinwheeling through me. I'm glad he has you now. Yeah, I whisper, but a vicious little voice inside me says, no, you have him. 31. This summer. As I'm digging through my purse for the hotel key, Alex leans into me, his hands heavy on my waist, his lips soft against the side of my neck, and it would be unwinding me if not for the buzzing in my skull, the steady throbs of alternating guilt and panic low in my stomach. I press the key card to the lock, then nudge the door open, and Alex releases me, stepping into the room after me. I beeline for the sink, slipping the backs off my oversized plastic earrings and setting them on the counter. Alex goes still and anxious just inside the door.
Did I do something? He asks.
I shake my head, grab a cotton swab and the blue bottle of eye makeup remover. I know I need to say something, but I don't want to cry, because if I cry, this becomes about me, and the whole point of it is lost. Alex will bend over backward to make me feel safe, when really what I need is for him to be honest. I swipe the cotton over my lids, loosening the black liquid eyeliner until I look like Charlize Theron in Mad Max Fury Road, gunpowder smeared across my face like war paint.
Poppy,
Alex says,
just tell me what I did.
I spin toward him, and he doesn't even crack a smile about my makeup. That's how worried he is, and I hate myself for making him feel like that. You didn't do anything, I say. You're perfect. His two expressions now are surprised and offended.
I'm not perfect.
I need to do this quick, rip it off like a band-aid. Were you going to propose to Sarah? His lips part, but his shock quickly melts into hurt.
What are you talking about?
I close my eyes, press the back of my hand to my head as if that can stop the buzzing. I open my eyes again, and his expression has barely shrunk. He's not reeling in his emotions. I'm going to get naked, Alex, for this conversation. David said you had a ring. He jams his mouth shut and swallows hard, looks toward the sliding balcony doors, then back to me.
I'm sorry I didn't tell you.
It's not that. I force the rising tears back down. I didn't realize how much you loved her. He half laughs, but there's no humor in his tense face.
Of course I loved her. I was with her on and off for years, Poppy. You loved the guys you were with, too.
I know, I'm not accusing you of anything, just... I shake my head, trying to organize my thoughts into something shorter than an hour-long monologue. I mean, you bought a ring.
I know that, he says. But why are you mad at me for that, Poppy? You were with Trey. Fucking jet-setting around the world, sitting in his lap in all four corners of the world. Was I supposed to think you weren't happy? To just wait for you?
I'm not mad at you, Alex, I cry. I'm mad at myself for not caring that I was getting in the way, for asking so much of you and keeping you from what you want.
He scoffs. What is it I want?
Why did she break up with you? I bite back. Tell me it had nothing to do with me, that Sarah didn't end things because of this thing between us, that since I've been out of your life, she hasn't been reconsidering everything. Just tell me that if that's the truth, Alex. Tell me I'm not the reason you're not married with kids right now and everything else you wanted. He stares at me, face terse, eyes dark and cloudy. Tell me, I beg, And he just stares at me, the silence of the room adding to the buzz inside my skull. Finally, he shakes his head.
Of course it's because of you.
I take a step back, like his words might burn me.
She broke up with me before we went to Sanibel, and I felt so guilty that whole trip because all I could think was, I hope Poppy doesn't think I'm boring too. I didn't even remember to miss her until I got home. That's how it always is when I'm with you. No one else matters. And then you're gone again, and life goes back to normal, and when Sarah and I got back together, I thought things were so different, so much better. But the truth is, she didn't want to go to Tuscany, and I told her I needed her to, so she agreed. Because I wasn't willing to give you up, and I thought if you two were friends, it would be easier.
He says, so intensely still now, he rivals the faux statue servers at the party.
Then you thought you were pregnant, and it scared me so much I got a fucking vasectomy. And it didn't even occur to me to ask Sarah what she thought. I just made the appointment, and a few days after, I was walking past this antique store, and I saw this ring, an old yellow-gold art deco thing with a pearl. I saw it and thought, that would be a perfect engagement ring. Maybe I should buy it. And my very next thought after that was, what the fuck am I doing? Not just the ring, which Sarah would have hated, by the way, but the vasectomy, all of it. I was doing it all for you, and I know that's not normal, and it definitely wasn't fair to her, so I ended things that day.
He shakes his head.
I scared myself so much that I couldn't tell you what had happened. It was terrifying to realize how much I loved you. And then you and Trey broke up, and God, Poppy, of course all of it was because of you. Everything is because of you. Everything.
His eyes are wet now, shimmering in the dim light over the sink, and his shoulders are rigid, and my gut feels like there's a knife twisting into it. Alex shakes his head, a small, restrained gesture, little more than a twitch.
It's not something you've done to me, he says. I kept hoping things would change for me, but they never have.
He takes a step toward me, and I fight to maintain my composure. A breath slips out of me, my shoulders relaxing, and Alex takes another step toward me, his eyes heavy, mouth twisted.
And I doubted myself for a long time before I ended things, because I did love her,
he says.
And I wanted to make it work because she's amazing, and we're good together, and we want all the same things, and I loved her in this way that feels so clear and easy to understand and manageable.
He breaks off, shaking his head again. The tears in his eyes make them look like the surface of some river, dangerous and wild and gorgeous.
I don't know how to love someone as much as I love you,
he says.
It's terrifying. And I get these bursts of thinking I can handle it, and then I think about what it will do to me if I lose you, and I panic and pull away, and I've never known if I'll be able to make you happy. But the other night, it sounds so ridiculous, but we were looking at Tinder, and you said you'd swipe right on me. And that's the kind of tiny thing that feels so huge when it's you. I lay awake trying to figure out what you meant for hours that night. I'm broken, and yeah, probably repressed, and I know I'm not who you've ever pictured yourself with. I know it doesn't seem like we make any sense, and we probably don't, and maybe I could never make you happy. Alex,
I reach out for him with both hands, pull him in against me. His arms come around me, and his head bows until he's a giant question mark hanging over me.
It's not your job to make me happy, okay? You can't make anyone happy. I'm happy just because you exist, and that's as much of my happiness as you have control over.
His hands curve in against my spine, and I twine my fingers into his shirt.
I don't know exactly what it all means, but I know I love you the same way you love me, and you're not the only one that scares.
I scrunch my eyes shut, gathering the courage to go on.
I feel broken too,
I tell him, my voice cracking into something thin and hoarse.
I've always felt like once someone sees me deep down, that's it. There's something ugly in there, or unlovable. And you're the only person who's ever made me feel like I'm okay.
His hand sweeps gently across my face, and I open my eyes, meet his head on. There's nothing scarier than the chance that once you really have all of me, that changes. But I want all of you, so I'm trying to be brave.
Nothing will change how I feel about you, he murmurs. I've been trying to stop loving you since that night you went inside to make out with the pothead water taxi driver.
I laugh, and he smiles just a little. I take his jaw in my hands and kiss him softly on the mouth, and after a second, he starts to kiss me back, and it's damp from tears and urgent and powerful, sending shockwaves through me.
Can you just do me one favor?
I ask. He knots his hands against my spine.
Only hold my hand when you want to.
Poppy, he says. There may come a day when I no longer need to be touching you at all times, but that day is not today.
The rehearsal dinner is at a bistro that Tom invested in during its early days, a place ablaze in candlelight and dripping with bespoke crystal chandeliers. There's no wedding party, just the grooms and their officiant, thus the lack of a true rehearsal. But Tom's whole extended family lives in Northern California and have shown up, along with a lot of David's friends who were at the party last night.
Wow, I say as we walk inside. This is the sexiest place I've ever been.
Nikolai's fumigation tent balcony is deeply offended, Alex says.
That fumigation tent will always be in my heart, I promise, and squeeze his hand, which emphasizes our size difference in a way that makes my spine tingle.
Hey, do you remember when I melted down about having slow Loris hands in Colorado after I rolled my ankle?
Poppy, he says pointedly.
I remember everything.
I narrow my eyes at him. But you said, he sighs.
I know what I said, but I'm telling you now, I remember it all.
Some would say that makes you a liar.
No, he says. What it makes me is someone who is embarrassed to still remember exactly what you were wearing the first time I saw you, and what you ordered once at a McDonald's in Tennessee, and who needed to preserve some small measure of dignity.
Aw, Alex, I coo, teasing even as my heart flutters happily. You forfeited your dignity when you showed up to O Week in khakis.
Hey, he says, tone chiding. Don't forget that you love me.
My cheeks flush warm without any hint of embarrassment. I could never forget that. I love him, and he remembers everything because he loves me too. My insides feel like an explosion of gold confetti.
Someone calls from the far side of the restaurant then.
Is that Miss Poppy Wright?
Mr. Nilsson strides toward us in a baggy gray suit, his blonde mustache the exact size and shape as the day I met him. Alex's hand frees itself from mine. For whatever reason, he obviously does not want to hold my hand in front of his father, and I feel a rush of happiness that he felt comfortable doing what he needed to.
Hi, Mr. Nilsson, I say,
and he stops abruptly a few feet in front of me, kindly smiling, and definitely not planning to hug me. He's wearing a comically large rainbow pin on his lapel. It looks like, with one wrong move, it could tip him over.
Oh, please, he says. You're not a kid anymore. You can call me Ed.
What the hell? You can call me Ed, too, I say.
He says.
She's joking, Alex supplies.
Oh,
Ed Nilsson says uncertainly. Alex goes red. I go red. Now is not the time to embarrass him.
I was so sorry to hear about Betty, I recover. She was an amazing woman.
His shoulders slump.
She was a rock to our family, he says. Just like her daughter.
At that, he starts to tear up, pulls off his wireframe glasses, and blows a breath out as he wipes at his eyes.
Not sure how we're going to get by without her this weekend.
And I feel sympathy for him, of course. He lost someone he loved, again. But so have his sons, and standing here with him while he tears up freely, grieves like every person deserves to, there's also something like anger building up in me. because next to me, Alex ironed out all his own emotion as soon as he saw his father approaching, and I know that's no coincidence. I don't mean to say it aloud, but that's how it comes out, with the subtlety of a battering ram. But you will get through it, because your son's getting married and he needs you. Ed Nilsson gives me an unironic, sad puppy face.
Well, of course, he says, sounding mildly stunned. If you'll excuse me, I have to...
He never finishes the sentence, just looks at Alex with a rather blank confusion and squeezes his son's shoulder before drifting away. Beside me, Alex lets out an anxious breath and I wheel toward him.
I'm sorry, I just made that weird, sorry.
No.
He slips his hand back into mine.
Actually, I think I just developed a fetish that's specifically you delivering hard truths to my father.
In that case, I say, let's go have some words with him about that mustache. I start to walk away, and Alex pulls me back to him, his hands light on my waist, voice low beside my ear.
In case I don't kiss you as pornographically as I want to for the rest of the night, please know that after this trip, I'll be investing in therapy to understand why I feel incapable of expressing happiness in front of my family.
And thus my fetish of Alex Nilsson exhibiting self-care was born, I say, and he sneaks a quick kiss on the side of my head. Just then, a wash of squeals and shrieks floats through the front doors of the bistro, and Alex steps back from me.
And that will be the nieces and nephew.
32. This summer. Bryce's kids are 6 and 4 years old, both girls, and Cameron's son is just over 2. Tom's sister has a 6-year-old daughter, too, and together, the 4 of them run wild through the restaurant, giggles ricocheting off the chandeliers. Alex is happy to chase after them, to fling himself onto the floor when they try to knock him over, and to hoist them, happily shrieking, into the air when he catches them. He is the Alex I know with them, funny and open and playful, and even if I'm not sure how to interact with kids, when he pulls me into the game, I try my best.
We're princesses,
Tom's niece, Kat, tells me, taking my hand.
But we're also warriors, so we have to kill the dragon.
And Uncle Alex is the dragon? I confirm, and she nods, wide-eyed and solemn.
But we don't have to kill him, she explains breathlessly. If we can tame him, he can be our pet.
From halfway under the table, where he's fending off the Nilsson brood one at a time, he shoots me an abbreviated, sad puppy look. Okay, I say to Kat, what's the plan? The night moves in ebbs and flows. Cocktail hour first, then dinner, a myriad of tiny gourmet pizzas all decked out in goat cheese and arugula, summer squash and balsamic drizzle, pickled red onion and grilled Brussels sprouts, and all kinds of things that would make pizza purists like Rachel Crone scoff. We take seats at the kids' table, which Bryce's wife, Angela, thanks me tipsily for about 100 times after the meal is over.
I love my kids, but sometimes I just want to sit down to dinner and talk about something other than Peppa Pig.
Huh, I say. We mostly talked about Russian literature. She slaps my arm harder than she means to when she laughs, then grabs Bryce by the arm and pulls him over.
Honey, you have to hear what Poppy just said.
She hangs on him, and he's a little stiff, a Nilsson deep down, but he also keeps a hand on her lower back. He doesn't laugh when Angela makes me repeat myself, but says in his flat, sincere, Nilsson way,
That's funny. Russian literature.
Before dessert and coffee are served, Tom's sister, hugely pregnant with twins, stands and clinks a fork to her water glass, calling attention at the head of the arrangement of tables.
Our parents aren't much for public speaking, so I agreed to give a little toast tonight.
Already teary-eyed, she takes a deep breath. Who would have thought my annoying little brother would turn out to be my best friend? She talks about her and Tom's childhood in Northern California, their screaming fights, the time he took her car without asking and crashed it into a telephone pole. And then the turning point, when she and her first husband divorced and Tom asked her to move in with him, when she caught him crying while watching Sweet Home Alabama and, after teasing him appropriately, sunk down onto the couch to watch the rest with him until they were both crying while laughing at themselves and decided they needed to go out in the middle of the night to get ice cream.
When I got married again, she says, the hardest thing was knowing I'd probably never get to live with you again. And when you started talking about David, I could tell how smitten you were, and I was scared I was going to lose even more of you. Then I met David.
She makes a face that elicits laughter, relaxed on Tom's side of the family and restrained on David's.
Right away, I knew I was getting another best friend. There's no such thing as a perfect marriage, but everything you two touch becomes beautiful, and this will be no different.
There's applause and hugging and kissing of cheeks, and servers have started to come out of the kitchen with dessert when suddenly Mr. Ed Nilsson is on his feet, swaying awkwardly, tapping a knife to his water glass so lightly he might as well be pantomiming it. David shifts in his seat, and Alex's shoulders rise protectively as a tension settles on his father.
Yes,
Ed says.
Starting off strong,
Alex whispers tightly. I squeeze his knee beneath the table and fold my hand into his. Ed takes off his glasses, holds them at his side, and clears his throat.
David,
he says, turning toward the grooms.
My sweet boy. I know we haven't always had it easy. I know you haven't,
he adds more quietly.
But you've always been a ball of sunshine and...
He blows out a breath. He swallows some rising emotion and continues.
I can't take credit for how you turned out. I wasn't always there how I should have been, but your brothers did an amazing job raising you, and I'm proud to be your father.
He looks down at the floor, gathering himself.
I'm proud to see you marrying the man of your dreams. Tom, welcome to the family.
As the applause lifts around the room, David crosses to his father. He shakes his hand, then thinks better of it, and pulls Ed into a hug. It's brief and awkward, but it happens, and beside me, Alex relaxes. Maybe when this wedding is over, everything will go back to how it was before, but maybe they'll change too. After all, Mr. Nilsson is wearing a big-ass gay pride pin. Maybe things can always get better between people who want to do a good job loving each other. Maybe that's all it takes. That night, when we get back to the hotel, Alex takes a quick shower while I flip through channels on the TV, pausing on a rerun of Bachelor in Paradise. When Alex gets out of the bathroom, he climbs onto the bed and draws me into him, and I lift my arms over my head so he can take my baggy t-shirt off, his hands spanning wide across my ribs, his mouth dropping kisses down my stomach.
Tiny fighter,
he whispers against my skin. This time, everything is different between us. Softer, gentler, slower. We take our time, say nothing that can't be said with our hands and mouths and limbs. I love you, he tells me in a dozen different ways, and I say it back every time. When we're finished, we lie together, tangled up and sheened in sweat, breathing deep and calm. If we talked, one of us would have to say, tomorrow is the last day of this trip. We'd have to say, what's next? And there's no answer for that yet. So we don't talk. We just fall asleep together, and in the morning, when Alex gets back from his run with 2 cups of coffee and a piece of coffee cake, we just kiss some more. Furiously this time, like the room's on fire and this is the best way to put it out. Then, when we have to, when we're out of time, we unwind from each other to get ready for the wedding. The venue is a Spanish-style house with wrought iron gates and a lush garden, palm trees and columns and long, dark wooden tables with high-backed, hand-carved chairs. Their floral arrangements are all vibrant yellow, sunflowers and daisies and delicate sprigs of tiny wildflowers, and a white-clad string quartet plays something dreamy and romantic as guests are entering the grounds. More high-back chairs are lined up on a stretch of uninterrupted lawn, a burst of yellow flowers lining the aisle between them. The ceremony is short and sweet because, in David's words, as they're walking back down the aisle to an upbeat, strings version of Here Comes the Sun, it's time to party. The day is whooshing past, and an ache takes up residence beneath my clavicle that seems to deepen with the twilight. It's like I'm experiencing the whole night twice over, two versions of the same film reel playing slightly overlapped. There's the me who's here now, eating an incredible seven-course Vietnamese meal, the same one who's chasing kids around the legs of oblivious adults, playing hide-and-seek with them and Alex under tables, the same one who's chugging margaritas on the dance floor with Alex while Pour Some Sugar on Me plays at top volume and drops of sweat and champagne sprinkle over the crowd. The same one who's pulling him close when the flamingos come on, playing I Only Have Eyes for You, and who buries my face in his neck, trying to memorize his smell more thoroughly than the last 12 years have allowed, so I can summon it at will, and everything about this night will come rushing back, his hand tight on my waist, his mouth ajar against my temple, his hips just barely swaying as we hold on to each other. There's that, Poppy, who's experiencing it all and having the most magical night of her life. And then there's the one who's already missing it, who's watching this all happen from some point in the distance, knowing I can never go back and do it all over again. I'm too afraid to ask Alex what comes next. I'm too afraid to ask myself that. We love each other. We want each other. But that hasn't changed the rest of our situation. So I just keep holding on to him and tell myself that, for now, I should enjoy this moment. I'm on vacation. Vacations always end. It's the very fact that it's finite that makes traveling special. You could move to any one of those destinations you loved in small doses, and it wouldn't be the spellbinding, life-altering 7 days you spent there as a guest, letting a place into your heart fully, letting it change you. The song ends. The dance ends. Not long after that, there are sparklers being lit in a long tunnel of people who love David and Tom, and then they're running through it, their faces awash in warm light and deep love, and then, as if it's a person drifting off to sleep, the night ends. Alex and I say our goodbyes, loose enough from a night of drinking and dancing to hug dozens of people who were perfect strangers hours ago. We drive home in silence, and when we get there, Alex doesn't shower, doesn't even undress. We just get into bed and hold on to each other until we fall asleep. The morning is better. For one thing, we both forgot to set alarms, and we were up late enough that even Alex's internal alarm clock doesn't wake us in time to laze around the hotel. We're running late from the moment we open our eyes, and there's nothing to do but throw clothes into bags, check under the beds for dropped socks and bras and whatever else.
We still have to take the Aspire back, Alex realizes aloud as he's zipping his luggage closed.
On it, I say. If I can get a hold of the girl who owns it, maybe she'll let us leave it at the airport and pay her an extra $50 or something.
But we don't get a hold of her, so instead we're screaming down the highway, crossing our fingers we make it to the airport in time.
Really regretting not showering now,
Alex says as he rolls his window down and rakes a hand through his dirty hair.
Showering? I say. When I was falling asleep, I had the thought, I have to pee, but I'll hold it until morning.
Alex glances over his shoulder.
I'm sure you left an empty cup in here at some point this week, if things get desperate.
Rude, I say.
But he's right. There's one under my foot and another in the back seat's cup holder.
Let's hope it doesn't come to that. I'm not a famously good shot.
He laughs, but it's wooden.
This is not how I imagined this day going.
Me neither, I say. But then again, the whole trip was sort of surprising.
At that, he smiles, grips my hand against the gear shift, and lifts it to his lips a few seconds later, holding it there, but not quite kissing it.
What, am I sticky? I ask.
He shakes his head.
just want to remember what your skin feels like.
That's really sweet, Alex, I say, and not at all something a serial killer would say. I'm deflecting, but I'm not sure how else to handle this. A mad dash together to the airport, a hasty goodbye at our gates, or maybe just splitting off and running in opposite directions. It's the exact antithesis of every rom-com movie I've ever loved, and if I let myself think about it, I think I might have a full-blown panic attack. By a miracle and a fair amount of speeding, and yes, bribing an Uber driver to skim through a few late yellow lights after dropping off the Aspire, we make it to the airport and get checked into our flights. Mine leaves 15 minutes after Alex's, so we head to his gate first, detouring to buy a couple granola bars and the latest issue of R&R from a bookstore in the terminal. We get to his gate just as boarding begins, but we have a few minutes until his group is called, so we stand there, panting, sweaty, shoulders sore from carrying our bags, my ankles scuffed from accidentally whacking it into my hard-shell carry-on bag every few steps.
Why are airports so hot? Alex says.
Is this the setup for a joke? I ask.
No, I genuinely want to know.
Compared to Nikolai's apartment, this is Arctic, Alex. His smile is tense. Neither one of us is handling this well.
So, he says.
So.
How do you think this article is going to go over with Swapna? Gardens that close in the middle of the day and carousels so hot they're unsafe to ride?
Oh, right. I cough. I'm less embarrassed that I lied to Alex about this trip than at the fact that I forgot to mention it until now, and am forced to use several of our last precious moments together explaining it. So, R&R might not have technically approved this trip. He arches an eyebrow.
Might not have?
Or might have outright rejected it.
What? Seriously? Then why are they paying for...
He cuts himself short as he reads the answer on my face.
Poppy, you shouldn't have done that, or you should have told me.
Would you have taken this trip if you knew I was paying for it?
Of course not,
he says. Exactly, I say, and I needed to talk to you. I mean, obviously we needed to talk.
You could have called me, he reasons. We were texting again. We were, I don't know, working on it.
I know, I say. But it wasn't that simple. I was having a hard time at work, just feeling over the whole thing and lost and bored and like I don't even know what I want next in my life. And then I talked to Rachel, and she pointed out that I'd sort of gotten everything I wanted professionally, and maybe I just needed to find something new to want. And then I thought back to when I was last happy, and...
What are you talking about?
Alex says, shaking his head.
Rachel told you to... trick me into going on a trip with you?
No, I say, panic wriggling in my gut. How is this going off the rails so quickly? Not that. Her mom's a therapist, and according to her, it's common to be depressed when you've met all your long-term goals, because we need purpose. And then Rachel suggested maybe I just needed to take a break from life and let myself figure out what I want.
A break from life,
Alex says quietly. His mouth going slack, his eyes dark and stormy. It's immediately obvious that I've said the wrong thing. This is all coming out so wrong. I have to fix it. I just mean, I hadn't really been happy since our last trip.
So you lied to me, so I'd take a trip with you, and then you had sex with me, and you told me you loved me, and came to my brother's wedding because you needed a break from your real life.
Alex, of course not, I say, reaching for him. He steps back from me, eyes low.
Please don't touch me right now, Poppy. I'm trying to think, okay?
Think about what? I ask, emotion thickening my voice. I don't understand what's happening, how I've hurt him, or how to fix it. Why are you so upset right now?
Because I meant it,
he says, finally meeting my eyes. A pulse of pain shoots through my stomach.
So did I, cry.
I meant it, and I knew I meant it,
he says.
It wasn't an impulse. I knew for years that I loved you, and I thought about it from every single angle and knew what I wanted before I ever kissed you. We went 2 years without talking, and I thought about you every day, and I gave you the space I thought you wanted, and that whole time I asked myself what I'd be willing to do, to give up, if you decided you wanted to be with me too. I spent that whole time alternating between trying to move on and let you go so you could be happy, and looking at job postings and apartments near you just in case. Alex, I shake my head, force the words past the knot in my throat. I had no idea. I know. He rubs at his forehead as he closes his eyes. I know that. And maybe I should have told you. But fuck, Poppy, I'm not some water taxi driver you met on vacation.
What's that supposed to mean? I demand.
When he opens his eyes, they're so teary I start to reach for him again until I remember what he said. Please don't touch me right now.
I'm not a vacation from your real life, he says. I'm not a novelty experience. I'm someone who's been in love with you for a decade, and you should never have kissed me if you didn't know that you wanted this all the way. It wasn't fair.
I want this, I say.
But even as I say it, a part of me has no idea what that means. Do I want marriage? Do I want to have kids? Do I want to live in a 70s quad level in Linfield, Ohio? Do I want any of the things that Alex craves for his life? I haven't thought any of that through, and Alex can tell.
You don't know that,
Alex says.
You just said you don't know, Poppy. I can't leave my job and my house and my family just to see if that cures your boredom.
I didn't ask you to do that, Alex, I say, feeling desperate, like I'm grappling for purchase and realizing everything under me is made of sand.
He's slipping through my grip for the last time, and there will be no packing this all back into form.
I know, he says, rubbing the lines in his forehead, wincing. God, I know that. It's my fault. I should have known this was a bad idea.
Stop, I say, wanting so badly to touch him, aching at having to settle for clenching my hands into fists. Don't say that. I'm figuring things out, okay? I need to figure some things out.
The gate agent calls for Group 6 to start boarding, and the last few stragglers line up.
I have to go, he says, without looking at me.
My eyes cloud up with tears, my skin hot and itchy, like my body shrinking around my bones, becoming too tight to bear.
I love you, Alex, I get out. Doesn't that matter?
His eyes cut toward me, dark, fathomless, full of hurt and want.
I love you too, Poppy, he says. That's never been our problem.
He glances over his shoulder. The line has almost disappeared.
We can talk about this when we're home, I say. We can figure it out.
When Alex looks back at me, his face is anguished, his eyes red-ringed.
Look, he says gently. I don't think we should talk for a while.
I shake my head. That's the last thing we should do, Alex. We have to figure this out.
Poppy.
He reaches for my hand, takes it lightly in his.
I know what I want. You need to figure this out. I'd do anything for you, but please don't ask me to if you're not sure. I really...
He swallows hard. The line is gone. It's time for him to go. He forces out the rest in a hoarse murmur.
I can't be a break from your real life, and I won't be the thing that keeps you from having what you want.
His name catches in my throat. He bends a little, resting his forehead against mine, and I close my eyes. When I open them, he's walking onto the jet bridge without looking back. I take a deep breath, gather up my things, and head to my gate. When I sit down to wait and pull my knees into my chest, hiding my face against them, I finally let myself cry freely. For the first time in my life, the airport strikes me as the loneliest place in the world. All those people, parting ways, going off in their own directions, crossing paths with hundreds of people, but never connecting.
33. 2 summers ago.
An older gentleman travels with us to Croatia as the official R&R photographer, Bernard. He's a loud talker, always wearing a fleece vest, often standing between Alex and me without noticing the funny looks we exchange over Bernard's bald head. He's shorter than me, though throughout the trip, he often tells us he was 5'6" back in his prime. Together, the three of us see the ancient city of Dubrovnik Old Town, with its high stone walls and winding streets, and further out, the rocky beaches and pristine turquoise water of the Adriatic. The other photographers I've traveled with have all been fairly independent, but Bernard's a recent widower, unused to living alone. He's a nice guy, but endlessly social and talkative, and throughout our time in the city, I watch him wear Alex down until all Bernard's questions are answered in monosyllables. Bernard doesn't notice. Usually, his questions are mere springboards for stories he'd like to share. The stories involve a lot of names and dates, and he takes plenty of time ensuring he's getting each right, sometimes going back and forth 4 or 5 times until he's positive this event happened on a Wednesday and not, as he first thought, a Thursday. From the city, we take a crammed ferry to Korčula, an island off the coast. R&R has booked us 2 apartment-style hotel rooms overlooking the water. Somehow, Bernard gets it in his head that he and Alex will be sharing one of these, which makes no sense since he is an R&R employee who should obviously get his own accommodations, while Alex is my guest. We try to tell him this.
"Oh, I don't mind," he says. "Besides, I got 2 bedrooms by accident."
It's a lost cause trying to convince him that that room was supposed to be Alex's and mine, thus the 2 bedrooms. And honestly, I think we both feel too much sympathy for Bernard to push the matter. The apartments themselves are sleek and modern, all whites and stainless steels with balconies overlooking the glittering water. But the walls are paper thin, and I wake every morning to the sounds of 3 tiny children running around and screaming in the apartment above mine. Furthermore, something has died in the wall behind the dryer in the laundry closet, and every day that I call down to the desk to tell them this, they send up a teenage boy to do something about the smell while I'm out. I'm fairly sure he just opens all the windows and sprays Lysol all over the place, because the sweet, lemony scent I return to fades each night as the dead animal smell swells back to replace it. I expected this to be the best vacation of any we've ever taken. But even aside from the death smell and the shrieking at dawn babies, there's the fact of Bernard. After Tuscany, without talking about it, Alex and I both took a step back from our friendship. Instead of daily texts, we started catching up every couple weeks. It would have been too easy to go back to how things were then, but I couldn't do that, to him or to Trey. Instead, I threw myself into work, taking every trip that came up, sometimes back to back. At first, Trey and I were happier than ever. This was where we thrived, on horseback and camelback, hiking volcanoes and cliff jumping off waterfalls. But eventually, our never-ending vacation started to feel like running, like we were 2 bank robbers making the best of a bad situation while we waited for the FBI to close in. We started arguing. He'd want to get up early and I'd oversleep. I was walking too slowly and he was laughing too loud. I was annoyed by how he flirted with our waitress and he couldn't stand how I had to browse every aisle of every identical shop we passed. We had a week left of a trip to New Zealand when we realized we'd run our course. "We're just not having fun anymore," Trey said. I started laughing from relief. We parted ways as friends. I didn't cry. The last 6 months had been a slow unbraiding of our lives. The breakup was just the snip of 1 last string. When I texted Alex to tell him, he said, "What happened? Are you okay?" "It'll be easier to explain in person," I wrote, heart trilling. "Fair enough," he said. A few weeks later, also over text, he told me that he and Sarah had broken up again. I hadn't seen that coming.
They'd moved to Linfield together when he'd finished his doctorate, were even working at the same school, a miracle so profound it seemed like the universe's express approval of their relationship, and from everything Alex had told me, they'd been better than ever, happier. It was all so natural for them, unless he was keeping their issues private, which would make perfect sense. "You want to talk?" I asked, feeling at once terrified and full of adrenaline. "Like you said," he wrote back, "probably easier to explain in person." I'd been waiting 2.5 months to have that conversation. I missed Alex so badly, and finally there was nothing in the way of us speaking plainly, no reason to hold back or tiptoe around each other or try not to touch. Except for Bernard. He kayaks at sunset with us, rides along on our tour of the family wineries gathered together a ways inland, joins us for seafood dinners every night, suggests a nightcap afterward. He never tires. "Bernard," Alex whispers one night, "might be God," and I snort into my white wine.
"Allergies?" Bernard says. "You can use my hanky."
Then he passes me an honest-to-God embroidered hanky. I wish Bernard would do something awful, like floss at the table, or just anything that would give me the courage to demand an hour of space and privacy. This is the most beautiful and worst trip Alex and I have ever taken. On our last night, the three of us get roaring drunk at a restaurant overlooking the sea, watching the pinks and golds of the sun melt across everything until the water is a sheet of light, replaced gradually by a blanket of deep purple. Back at the resort, the sky has gone dark, we part ways, exhausted in more ways than one, and heavy with wine. 15 minutes later, I hear a light knock on my door. I answer in my pajamas and find Alex standing there, grinning and